Have you finished your personal statement yet? Now's the perfect time to get it professionally reviewed by a medical school HQ expert advisor. We have former directors of admissions, admissions officers, and the like on our small team of amazing people. They have the inside knowledge from reading thousands and thousands and thousands, tens, if not 100,000 personal statements going through the process and setting up the process for their whole committee. They know exactly what medical schools look for and the common red flags that can get your entire application thrown out. Take advantage of our flash sale right now, going through May 6th, up to 6,000 characters reviewed for just $150. That's a $75 discount on our regular price. Go to editmyps.com. Again, that's editmyps.com. The pre-med year, session number 568. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. And welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have a wonderful guest who is popular on TikTok and Instagram and all of those amazing places, and is doing wonderful things out in the world of medicine on her way to psychiatry residency. But before we jump into a conversation with Julia, I want to mention the MCAT Minute, brought to you by Blueprint MCAT. Did you know if you go over to blueprintmcat.com, you can, for no money, for free, go sign up for a free account at blueprintmcat.com and get access to a lot of amazing free tools. Their amazing study planner tool, their flashcard platform, their free half-length diagnostic, and free full-length exam. Again, did I mention it's free over at blueprintmcat.com? Go check them out today. Thanks for Blueprint MCAT for always showing up for our listeners here at the pre-med years. We have some fun changes coming in for the pre-med years. If you've been a loyal listener for a while, you've noticed we've missed some episodes here and there. We've kind of had some team changes, and we're slowly kind of massaging things in terms of episodes that are going out and what kind of episodes. The MCAT podcast will kind of be rolled into the pre-med years now with a more MCAT focused episode once a month here on the pre-med years. The old pre-meds podcast will be rolled into the pre-med years as well, trying to help streamline our operations to make things a little bit easier and efficient so that we can do more for you all. So we're trying to do more by doing less, if that makes sense. But all of that is coming. If you've been wondering kind of where this podcast has been, we're here. We're still coming. We have Julia, amazing guest today. I found Julia on TikTok. You may know Julia on TikTok as kind of the dancing doctor. I think there's another TikTok dancing doctor out there who is a DNP, not an MD or a DO. Julia is in medical school. She just matched into psychiatry residency. But she is known for what many may consider very unprofessional behavior, because she is an EDM kind of rave-going dancer. And she loves going to raves, dancing, being her true self. And there is a lot of pushback in the world of the professional medical world, because it's still a very conservative, a very hoity-toity kind of world. We talk about that. We also talk about how she's kind of been pushing boundaries her whole life with crafting her own pre-med curriculum and so much more. Julia is awesome. I look forward to you listening to this episode. Julia, welcome to the pre-med years. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to chat with you and learn more about your story and hopefully help educate some pre-med students, medical students, and maybe change a little bit of minds around what professionalism looks like in this crazy world. Julia, when did you first realize you wanted to be a physician?
I actually did not realize this at a young age. I wanted to be a backup dancer for a lot of my like young elementary school years. Thought I was going to go into a business for a while. And then eventually I got to college and I was taking like the pre-med classes just to see, you know, do I actually want to do this? Ended up falling totally in love with physiology, like was so excited to go to class. And knew that I like really wanted to fully pursue like and have that autonomy of like prescribing and seeing patients. I was always interested in psych, so I thought maybe psychiatry early on, but again, was keeping an open mind. So I really kind of decided after changing my major about 5 times, the beginning of junior year, I was like, all right, I'm going full force. We're sending it.
What you were obviously exposed to some sort of healthcare to initially dip your toes in the pre-med world. Do you remember what it was about the pre-med world that initially lured you there? Having the backup dancer dreams quashed at some point?
Yes. I think AP bio, honestly, in high school, okay. I took it really just to like have an AP class to apply to college. And when I learned about transcription and translation for the first time, like the central dogma of biology, how genes, you know, get to proteins and that's how we're talking right now. My mind was blown. Like, I'm like, you're telling me because electrons have a negative charge, all of this is happening. I'm having thoughts. We're having this conversation just because electrons are moving in this way.
That's so funny. You're like, there's a stop sign on the street and there's a stop sign in my body. What?
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. Like the lit codons. And like, I was like, this is,
you were nerding out.
This is happening. You're like, this is happening right now everywhere in my body. And there's no rhyme or reason, you know, RNA polymerase doesn't know that this is its job to go transcribe genes. Like it's all just biophysics. I was like, I am enthralled. I've got to know more. Okay. So I was taking those pre-med classes and then I was like, do I really want to like go to medical school and then go to residency and do this whole process? And I actually did try at one point. My dad is in business. So he was like, you do great in sales. You're good at talking to people. I took a microeconomics class and I was like, get me out of here. Like, this is not it. Like, I was miserable the whole time. And I was just much happier in even like chemistry and organic chemistry. I really did like OCHEM. I thought it was really interesting how just everything in the body works together. And then being able to also have a career where not only am I doing cool stuff intellectually, I'm also like making an impact on people's lives every single day. And having that long-term sense of purpose was really important to me, as long as just this career of lifelong learning.
Yeah. So it sounds like you became a pre-med student officially a little bit later in your undergrad journey. How did that affect applying to medical school? Did you have to take some extra undergraduate years to do that?
So no, I was just taking the pre-med classes kind of like just in case. So I did start relatively early. Okay. Just, I had a few crises of like, should I switch? Like, should I fully commit to this? I was like considering majoring. I also really love kinesiology and nutrition, really into fitness. So I was like maybe going that angle. So a lot of the classes that I was considering overlapped anyway for pre-med. So I ultimately actually ended up doing a build your own major. So that was kind of like the hodgepodge.
Yeah. All right. But before we talk about the build your own major, because that's always like a question. It's like, what should I major in? And I'm like, what do you want to major in? Like go do that thing. And I was an exercise physiology major as well. So kinesiology all that good stuff I love as well. A lot of students that I talk to that have very similar stories as to you in terms of not wanting to commit and trying lots of other plan Bs potentially out here, a lot of times it comes down to self-confidence and wondering whether or not you can actually do it, and the fear of rejection and all of that other stuff that comes into it. How much do you think that played into your unwillingness, if you want to call that, to actually commit to medical school?
I think because I knew all the things that I was going to have to then do to get into medical school. Like, I was taking these classes, but I knew if I decide to go to medical school, I'm going to have to join a research lab. I'm going to have to find some kind of clinical experience. I'm going to have to volunteer. I'm going to have to get all these clubs and hobbies and really work on myself to be like a holistic applicant. Otherwise, it's kind of like go big or go home for me. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it full force. Mm-hmm. And I think that was definitely part of my hesitation, is like, am I going to commit to this 8-year 12-year trajectory,
30-year
as someone who's only 30-year exactly, as a 19-year-old who's just in college and having fun and maybe interested in biology.
Yeah,
it was a tough choice
for someone who grew up wanting to be a backup dancer and exploring this world a little bit and liking science. How did you get the knowledge of joining a research lab and doing this clinical experience kind of stuff? Where were you getting your information? Did you have good support, like pre-health support on campus, or did you have physicians around you helping you?
the most reliable source, Reddit. I was deep into Reddit. Yes. And I was looking, I remember being, I think like a sophomore, and I was all the way deep into like surgery Reddit. And it was like, is it worth it? Do you have to give up your family? Is this a recipe for divorce? Like,
hey, have you ever gone back and looked at your old posts? If you ever posted, or are you just lurking?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, no. So I made the mistake of, I didn't realize Reddit was supposed to be an anonymous like database.
Yeah.
So I was posting like my Accutane journey, like my MCAT score increase journey. And like, now I'm like looking back and it's funny. I still have like those posts up.
That's awesome.
But I did have two. I had one friend who was 1 year older than me, and he was like a stellar applicant. And, like, he was like the treasurer of the pre-med society and like was an EMT and doing all this stuff. And so he kind of like sat me down and was like, if you want to do this, like, these are the things you have to do. And I would be like, well, but I have all these other cool experiences and I'm a well-rounded person. He's like, nope, I'm going to be honest with you. You're not going to make it if you don't get these three areas and hit the core competencies. And it was kind of the tough love I needed to really like kick it up in high gear.
Yeah. It's interesting. I subscribed maybe to a different philosophy of like that checklist of you need to do these things. Yeah, it's hard. There's so much information out there, a lot of misinformation. And
yes.
And ultimately at the end of the day, there's 200 plus medical schools with 200 plus admissions committees, all with different ideas on who they want and what they want. And so it's really hard to narrow that down.
Yeah. And you can tell when someone is just checking the boxes to check the boxes, or 100%. When someone actually has like a story to their application.
100%. What do you think was the hardest thing about being a pre-med student?
I think the not knowing if this will even be worth it.
Yeah.
Like, I really struggled with that because
worth it in terms of career happiness or worth it in terms of getting into medical school?
Getting in. Okay. I wasn't even thinking that far about the career happiness thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, since being in medical school, my thoughts on that have shifted as well. The more I've learned about the healthcare system and what the job of a doctor really looks like. I know as a kid, when you think of, I want to be a doctor, you think of an idea in your head, and then once you're actually in the hospital and rotating, you're like, this is a very different job than I had originally envisioned. So coming to terms with that was also interesting. Mm-hmm. But I was more just terrified of, is all this studying, is me choosing to like focus on this exam rather than do things with my friends and like have this college experience.
Yeah.
Am I even going to get in after all this hard work?
Yeah. How did you reconcile that? If you didn't get in, let's rewind. I'm assuming you got in first try, right? You got in obviously at some point. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you got in first try. If you didn't get in the first time, did you know, like, I'm going to reapply, this is what I want, I'm going to make it work? Or were you like, if I don't get in, then I'll go be a backup dancer again?
This is so bad and I don't recommend this, but I had no plan B.
Love it. I recommend that.
I was like, I'm going, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was like, you know, have a plan B. Like,
heck,
I remember
no.
my first day of organic chemistry, we sat down. I was at UMass Amherst, huge state school. It's a 350 person auditorium. And the professor goes, I know most of you are here because you're pre-med. Mm-hmm. I want you to look around. You guys are not all going to make it.
Yeah,
I don't care what you think.
I hate that talk.
I know. It was so disheartening. Yeah. Everyone was like, oh my God. But now I look back and I'm like, I'm one of like the few people that I remember being pre-med with that made it. There's a few of us.
Yeah.
So many people do end up switching. And I wonder if it's because, you know.
It's because of that talk.
I know, because of the talk. Or I'm like, is it because I was like, had no plan B? I had no choice.
Yeah. I am a huge subscriber of no plan B, because the psychology is proven as much as you can prove psychology of
you can't let yourself fail. Your ego won't let it happen.
Well, that and having that plan B is a distraction to plan A. And so you don't commit fully because you know there's a backup. And it's just like, well, so for me, plan B is reapply. Plan C is reapply. But that also gets misunderstood for not being realistic. I'm like, well, no, if you have a 2.0 GPA and can't break a 490 on your MCAT, you have to be realistic and maybe understand that academically you're not gonna to make it. So that's not plan B. That's just a complete shift.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's lots of philosophies around all of that fun stuff. So you obviously got in. What do you think it was with your application, with applying and interviewing, that that helped you ultimately end up at a good school?
I think it was how I kind of curated all my experiences. Like I very much with, honestly, the build your own major was a huge talking point in all of my interviews. I did like a double major with psych, and then I combined like kinesiology, nutrition, biochem to kind of just get a holistic picture of human health. I've always been really interested in like whole body health, not just like, you know, this is a medication, this is a mechanism of action. Yeah. Like, what are all the elements that, you know, impact us humans?
Wait a minute. You're speaking DO and you go to an MD school. How do you do that?
I know, right?
I have this argument all the time. I'm like, good physicians, period, treat patients holistically, not just DOs. So anyway,
I agree.
And most people totally would agree. It's and I actually had that argument with the president at the time of the American Osteopathic Association. I'm like, you guys don't own holistic medicine. He goes, I agree.
Thank you.
I agree. He's like, we just do a better job maybe of integrating it earlier. I'm like, okay, I can't argue that. But
that's true. I definitely, at least in my school, would have had to integrate it myself a little more.
All right. Sorry to interrupt. I wanted to throw that in there.
No worries. That's hilarious. I have a ton of friends actually at DO school. So I've like talked about this with them at length as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the most important part was like having that angle and then having all my experiences back that and show that I'm not just like checking the box biology major, checking the box research clinical, like I'm going out of my way to like petition professors to let me into their classes. I'm coming up with my own curriculum plan. I'm going and finding a sponsor who's like in my field. I'm showing curiosity. I'm showing interest. I'm showing thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
And then I'm combining that with experiences to match. Like I was a crisis text line counselor. So I'm really there like at the forefront of people having mental health crises that don't necessarily have access to like services like therapy and stuff that's like huge cost barriers. And I was able to kind of talk about those. Like that was one of my most meaningful experiences and talk about that in a way that related back to like the sociology classes I took and the psych classes I took.
Yeah.
And like my reasoning behind wanting to take those classes and wanting to have the impact that I ultimately want to have as a psychiatrist or as a physician.
So let me paraphrase in my opinion why that stood out. Having read thousands of applications at this point and my YouTube series application renovation, students with 4.0 GPAs and perfect MCAT scores not getting into medical school, it sounds like you did an amazing job, number one, of understanding who you are, first and foremost. Understanding why you're here, your motivations, right? Being able to reflect on your journey. So most people who are just checking that box aren't reflecting. They're just doing and they're not understanding why and able to communicate that. But it also sounds like you were able to show ambition. You were able to show initiative. And more importantly, you were able to show impact. And that's something that I talk a lot about lately is I get the question all the time is you might as well, having your social media kind of presence, students asking, what should I do? Should I do this? Should I do that? Will this help my application? Will that help my application? Right. And ultimately my answer is, well, what do you want to do? Right. There's 60 plus thousand students applying to medical school every year. It's been done, right? This thing that you think is going to help you stand out, it's been done before. Short of curing cancer, right? Put that on your application that you cured cancer, you're going to stand out. But short of that, it's been done. So now the question is, what do you want to do? And then how do you, like you were just talking about, how do you show that reflection? How do you show that the reason, the why, the meaning behind it? And so I try to help students understand this X factor that everyone's looking for. The language I use now is shifting away from X factor. Let's talk about impact factor. Who are you as a person and how are you impacting the world around you in what you're doing and what you want to do and not just going and doing the things that you think you need to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I totally agree.
So I want to talk about your transition to medical school. How did that from undergrad to medical school, how did that transition go? For me, it was terrible. It was a terrible transition.
I was going to say a big slap in the face.
Why? What happened?
I was simply not prepared for the sheer volume of information that like you're expected to learn like that. Like, I'm sure this is like a very common experience. The first 2 weeks of like our biochem unit in medical school is like the entire semester of your pre-med biochem and the entire semester of your foundational bio one, bio two, and chem one, and like all different classes combined. And you really have to just ramp it up. Like I would study in college. I would study till like 6 p.m. every night. And then I'd be like, okay, going to meet my friends at the dining hall and have a nice night. I had a rule. I don't do any work on weekends, which is like, looking back, I'm like, wow, that was really, really crazy of me. If I had to study on a weekend, that meant that I had been like slacking during the week. In medical school, it's pretty much every single day you're getting up and you're trying to study as much as possible. My roommates actually even took it to the next level. I would watch them. I live with four other med students, and they would get up every day at 6, do the Anki before lecture started at 8, watch lecture 8 to noon, do Anki then until 6 p.m. and study that night.
Wow.
And it is just a grind.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to do that. That's not what I did.
Yeah.
But it's definitely just another level of how much you actually have to learn compared to undergrad.
Yeah. One of the things that kind of drew me to you on social media and reaching out to you was the fact that you have life outside of medical school. How did you maintain that life outside of medical school and talk about that kind of world that you live in?
Yeah, I am very balance focused. And I think if you want to have that kind of balance, you have to be so intentional about it. I am like a time management, like, fiends. Like I look at my calendar every week and I plan out every single day. Like when I'm working out, I would look at my calendar. If I had any block of like 2 hours free, I would fill it with something, whether it's like more practice questions or going to hang with friends or like adding in a yoga class, things that I all knew would just like make me feel more fulfilled in general. Because when I felt like a more fulfilled person, then I was actually excited to get up, grab a latte, sit down and grind for 8 hours. Like you, for me at least, like I am unable to work when I've just been like hustling all week. It really does make a huge impact in my productivity to also do things that I enjoy and like be a full, well-rounded person outside of medicine.
Yeah. A lot of people will hear that and they go, I can't structure my life to that detail. How does that work for you? Like you mentioned, oh look, I have a block of time here. Hey, friends, like I have 2 hours available for you on Thursday at 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Are you available? Like, is that literally the kind of conversation that you would have? And how does that work?
Yeah. So I look at my week. I'm a very social person. Like I really recharge around friends and family. And luckily I'm in Boston. So I have like some of my high school friends. I have some college friends. I have my med school friends and my family. So at the start of every week, I look at my week ahead, see what days I'm booked. If I'm not booked on a day, like a Thursday night, oh, but my evening's free, I'll text like one of my group chats and see who's around. I even would have a list in my phone of like friends to hang out with. So I could just look at the list and be like, who have I not seen in a while? Pick someone from the list. Reach out to them. So it's definitely a little more scheduling of like free time than most people are used to, but it definitely allowed me to just like know that, okay, Thursday night I'm hanging out with Anna and I'm like so excited. And now Thursday day, I'm going to wake up. I'm going to work super hard because I know that at 7 p.m. I have Anna to hang out with.
Yeah.
And it almost made me like know, like I can't just leisurely do this. And if 100%. I have to work later into the night, it's like, I have plans.
Yeah.
I'm making those plans. I have my workout at 5. I'm getting this done. It like gives me another source of motivation.
You don't fall prey to Parkinson's law. I think it's called. I always forget if it's law or principle. The Parkinson's law. Let's call it law. If you're familiar with it, it's the time that's needed to accomplish a task will stretch to the time allotted for mm-hmm. it.
Absolutely.
Right?
If you need a task done fast, give it to a busy person.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And so, having that sort of structure around your schedule. And I hear from a lot of non-traditional students who have kids who will say, having a kid and knowing that I want to be there for bedtime and reading a book and doing this makes me more focused, more intentional.
Wow.
And basically that's what you're doing is you're saying, yes, I'm a medical student. Yes, this is important. but my life is also important and I want to maintain that life. And you're doing medical school just like everyone else, right? Did you fail medical school?
No, never failed a single exam.
You did
it. Never failed anything, had to repeat anything. All my shelves were fine. And definitely there were some times where I was like, ooh, like I'm a little too close to comfort with this week, but
yep.
That techno show last Saturday was so worth it.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the techno show, because this is a big part of your social media presence, is your love of electronic music. And I'm not in this world, so I may say the wrong world.
No worries.
but the EDM world and going to raves and dancing and just being you, I'm assuming there's lots of flack for your professionalism as a future physician, saying, hey, you shouldn't be dancing like that. You shouldn't be on show like that for the world to see as a future doctor. Number one, do you get that sort of response? And number two, how do you respond to it?
Absolutely. I think that's part of the appeal of my account and why I've gone so viral, is because so many people have something to say. One of the most common comments I get is like, I can't believe you're dressing like that. That's so unprofessional. But then what I love about my followers is they'll come right back and say, she's not wearing that in the hospital. She is off the clock. She is in her own time. I trust her actually more as a physician because she's actually like a happy person. Yeah.
And to paint a picture, like what you're wearing for someone who hasn't seen, it's maybe like a bikini with some like fishnet stocking legging things, right? You're covered, but it's like a bathing suit almost to
exactly
at the minimum.
A bathing suit with a lot of different accessories,
yeah,
and crazy hair and makeup. And yeah. I feel like that's also, I love fashion, and rave and festival fashion is definitely its own sphere. And if you've never been to a rave or festival, it might seem a little bit out there. You know, these are not things I would wear out even like to a club in the city. Like this is like festival fashion is very much its own niche. And I just love it as a form of self-expression. Festivals are such like a safe and like beautiful place that you can really just wear whatever you want.
You're not walking around Faneuil Hall in that getup?
No, no. Yeah, definitely not. Much less into the hospital and something like that, as opposed to what many of the commenters may think.
Yeah. And we were talking before we hit record about the med bikini gate, where there was a quote unquote paper study that came out saying, hey, physicians, specifically female physicians, although it did talk about male physicians as well, shouldn't be in bathing suits and drinking alcohol on their social media. What's your thought on that, right? You living in this world as a medical student, about to become a resident and graduate as a physician, who does live in a world where you're pushing boundaries on appearances and clothing and culture. How do you rebut that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that frustrates me about comments like that, especially like, I could not believe when the med bikini thing came out and I realized it was the school that I was about to attend. By the way, that person just got promoted to chief of something. So I was like, all my roommates were like, uh-oh.
But chief of first, hypocrisy, maybe?
Chief of something, yeah. I think it really begs the question. I was like, what is the larger like social commentary that people think, like, why? Let's like really try to get into it. Why are people saying it's unprofessional? Is it because like people embracing their femininity or sexuality is something that we're trying to like oppress, or like it's not okay? Like, what is the message we're sending by even calling that unprofessional? It's one thing if someone walks into like a patient room wearing something that's inappropriate for the workplace, but a surgeon, a female surgeon with a corona on Cinco de Mayo on the beach in a bikini, like, I think the people that are calling that unprofessional need to kind of look within as to why they have these ideas and like what kind of like internalized misogyny that our culture is still perpetuating. And I think purity culture is like huge in this as well. And physicians are supposed to be like, you know, the utmost, like most buttoned up, like professionals. But I think just professionalism in general needs a huge overhaul with how things are going. We've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. Do you think, I think, it, yes, misogyny and purity culture and all of that, yes. Put that aside for this small conversation. Do you think, and obviously you are a medical student now, so you're more familiar with where things are at now, the culture around expectations of what our physicians, our meaning patients, right? Mm-hmm. Who our physicians are, do you think that has changed or is changing because of social media? Because we can see these people on social media like yourself who are going to raves and dancing and doing this stuff. And oh, by the way, your next post is you in a lab or doing research or presenting a poster going, oh, this is a professional person who has a life. Do you think social media allows us to see that there are multiple kind of contexts for one person?
Absolutely. I think like now more than ever, people are realizing that, or it's just helped humanize physicians so much more, like that we are people too. And I think especially with like how residency training is, like we have been so treated as just these like people whose entire life purpose is to complete this job. And back in the day, like residents are called residents because they used to reside in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And that was their entire life. And that was the expectation, is like, you are making, and some people still have this idea and will comment on my posts, like, as a physician, you are making a greater sacrifice to society. Yeah. And in some ways, yes, you are. But I think that mentality is a little bit unhealthy. And I think physicians who are happier and more balanced have better outcomes, like honestly. It's just wild that it's taken until now for people to kind of realize that. But on the other hand, I think it's made people want to actually go to the doctor more, because now instead of the physician being some like having this huge gap between patient and physician, we're more humanized, and it makes people want to actually engage with care more. And I'm hoping that it's actually bringing people in for the care that they actually need.
That'd be an interesting kind of study if it's not done already. It'd be more of a survey study, but really understanding the patient, who they're choosing as physicians. I'm really good friends with Natalie. I can't remember her last name. Crawford? No. Natalie. I just know her, Natalie. She's the REI doc on Instagram, TikTok, et cetera. And she, very early on, we became friends, and I was talking to her about starting a podcast and getting on TikTok and starting a YouTube channel. And Natalie Crawford. We have continued to communicate, and she has talked about how her social media presence draws patients to her because
my DMs are flooded of people waiting for me to
these patients go, oh, I like who you are. I like the way you communicate. I like your presence. I like your calming nature. I like whatever. I want to see you for my care. And I wonder, right, if we had some sort of longitudinal data from 5 years ago, now 10 years from now, to go how involved from a social media aspect, from a kind of a public aspect, actually impacts both the kind of attraction of patients to providers, to physicians, and then the actual care that's given, because that trust is kind of already built before that mm-hmm. patient even sees you.
Exactly. Yeah. And it goes both ways too. Like I have people who say like, I would never see you as my physician. Like I don't approve this lifestyle. And
great.
I'm like, that is totally your prerogative. That's the great thing about medicine, is like, you should find a doctor that you feel comfortable with and you feel like sees you and upholds your values and you have a good connection with. So power to you for shopping around. I think people definitely should not just stick with the first doctor that they get. And if they feel like their values don't align, you're more than welcome to find someone else.
So, Julia, let's talk about the pre-med student listening to this right now going, great, I'm going to start posting all about bikini life and raving and all of this, hopefully legal stuff. Don't post anything illegal. There's still some stigma out there, and these students are always worried about what are admissions committees doing? Are they snooping on my social medias? Do you have any words of advice for students, especially ones who haven't gotten into school yet? I mean, you were kind of in this boat recently with applying to residency.
Yes.
So you're still in that same world where what advice do you have for someone who is worried about their social media presence impacting their ability to get into medical school, residency, et cetera?
I think the safest option is just lay low while you're doing any kind of admissions process. Mm-hmm. I think if you already have a huge following, like for me, the reason I decided to keep my social media active is because I do have brand contracts on my videos. So I actually like contractually have to keep my profile public and live to fulfill these contracts that I've signed. That kind of changes the discussion a little bit between like whether, you know, you can lay low or not. But I think definitely anytime you post something, you should be perfectly fine with either your grandparents finding it or the dean of admissions for whatever program or school that you're hoping to go to find it. And it's funny, one of my advisors in psychiatry was actually saying, like, you know, the dean of the medical school has a burner account just to follow you and monitor your posts.
That's awesome.
I had a feeling she was seeing them, but it's just funny to know that she is definitely following along with my journey.
That's hilarious. And you are on TikTok and other places, juliarose.med, for people to go find you. You're closing in on 300,000 followers.
It's crazy. I'm getting close, 10K more, and I'm about to have a username change.
Oh, you are?
To juliarose.md.
Awesome. That is exciting.
Take the E out.
Take the E out. No more education. Remove the E for education.
Yeah, no.
Lifelong learners. That's what we are. Yes. So at the end of the day, you have paved your own path, whether it's your the major that you kind of created, this life and study schedule and life balance with these passions that you have with dancing. Do you think you're going to be a better physician? You've been a better medical student because of that? How do you think that's affected you? And obviously, it's only an N of one, so you can't really know any mm-hmm. difference, but you see the people around you.
Absolutely.
Do you think you're better for it? Not better than them, but just better for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And I think everybody is different too. Like people know like what is good for them. Like I have one of my roommates who her like happy place is in her room with a book, a cup of tea, reading. And like she comes out of that feeling so refreshed. And I might just have a little bit of a different cup of tea. You know, I like to be like headbanging front row at the rail at a music festival, but I think it's okay to respect people's different, you know, ways that they recharge. And as long as you're not doing anything like unsafe or illegal, like have fun and just like do what makes you feel like a well-rounded, fulfilled human. I think the hospital can be a very hard place to be every day. I'd see so much burnout from like nurses to med students to residents and doctors. And I found even like in my own just experience in the hospital, the people who have these lives outside of medicine are doing things that are contributing outside of their job, have better connections with patients, come to work feeling refreshed, and are just better people to be around, and their patients really trust them. I think you can tell the people who are kind of scroogey and all they do is live, eat, breathe, career, and they come in every day and it's kind of like a dictatorship. Like you can just catch the vibe of people who don't, you know, take care of themselves outside, and it can definitely come out in their interactions with both the team and with patients.
Yeah. As we wrap up here, what final words of wisdom do you have for those students on their journey to medicine?
I would say don't dull your shine. Like if you have something that you're passionate about, if you have like an angle that you're going for, like I had people even tell me, don't do the build your own major because that's risky. That's not a real major. Or like stop posting on social media. You're going to ruin your chance of residency. And now I'm so, so happy that I trusted my gut and just fully went for it, because at the end of the day, like at least I know I did everything I could, and no matter what happens, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to figure it out. You got to back yourself. You got to like be confident, trust yourself. You guys will figure it out. Don't worry.
All right. So there you have it, Julia. You can go find her, juliarose.med on TikTok. go give her a follow. Let her know you listened to her episode here on the Pre-Mid Years and that you enjoyed, I hope, her conversation with us today. Don't forget to check out to blueprintmcat.com. Have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the Pre-Mid Years.
This is MedEd Media.